let's get started here. I'd like to welcome everybody to the State of Utah Insurance Department Bail Bond Surety Oversight Board meeting. The first thing we're going to do here is Steve is going to give out a passcode, which attendees are going to want to jot down so that you can confirm that you attended this meeting to get your requirements fulfilled for attending a meeting once per year for the insurance department. And before we proceed here any further, I'd like to ask everybody to put your phone on mute, please, so that we don't have any confusion here as to who's saying what, when, and whatnot. And if you have any questions, I'll make sure as we go along that I ask the attendees if they have any questions or any comments, and make sure that everybody gets an opportunity to say their piece. So next we'll have Steve give us the passcode, please.
All right, so we'll do one code at the beginning and then another one at the end. And if you will email both of those codes to me within 30 minutes of the end of the meeting, I'll get you all down as attending. My email is sgooch, and that's sgooch at utah.gov. And the first code for the start of the meeting is 050802.
Okay, next thing I'll do here is I have an anchor location determination that I'm going to read here. In accordance with the Utah Code 52-4-2074, as chair of the Bail Bond Oversight Board, I, Clay Carlos, determined that holding a meeting at an anchor location presents a substantial risk to the health and safety to those who may be present at the anchor location due to the current COVID pandemic. Pursuant to Code 52-4-2075, this determination is valid for 30 days from the date of this determination, dated the 15th day of April, 2021, signed by me, Clay Carlos, Chair of the Bail Bond Oversight Board. The next thing we're going to do here is we're going to, I'm going to do a roll call here for our board members. Keep my fingers crossed that we have enough here to have a quorum so that we can have a substantive meeting here and make sure that we're not wasting our time. Dominic, are you with us today?
Present.
And I do believe Chad Woolley will not be with us today. Is Tony Choate with us today?
Present.
How about Bonnie Johnson? Are you with us today?
Yes, I'm here.
And Kurt Oda, are you with us still?
Yep.
Okay, and Reed, are you here?
Present.
Okay, terrific. Looks like we will have a quorum, so we can proceed and make sure that we do things right today. So has every board member had an opportunity to read the minutes and examine them to see if they feel like they were right? Go ahead.
Really quick, this is Steve with the department. Would you do one for the department staff as well, so we know who of us are on here?
Absolutely. I'm sorry, Steve. I can do that. No problem.
Yeah, no problem.
Is Commissioner John Pike here today with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Clay.
Welcome, Mr. Pike.
Yeah.
Steve, I know you're here, obviously. Is Tracy Klausmeier with us today?
Yes, I am.
All right. Thank you, Tracy. And is Danny with us today?
I am here, yes.
All right. Thank you, Danny. Now back to the adoption of the minutes. Has every board member had an opportunity to review them? And if they have, can we get a motion to adopt them, please?
So Dominic motions to adopt.
Oh. Sorry, go ahead. So Dominic motions to adopt the minutes, and Kurt will second it. All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Is anybody aye. Opposed? It looks like all are in favor, no opposed. Next on the agenda, we have a financial summary report from Danny Schoenfeld. Are you prepared to give that to us, Danny?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So for the third quarter, we had, let me just get that complete. We had $453 in expenses, and that primarily came from personnel expenses, and year to date, we've spent about $6,760.61.
Okay.
Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I have no questions about it. Does any other board members have a question about that at all? Well, it looks like it's pretty cut and dry, Danny. I sure appreciate you compiling that for us and presenting it. So,
no problem.
Can we get a motion to approve these?
This is Tony.
To approve the summary report.
The summary report.
Dominic seconds motion.
Okay, so we have Tony to motion to approve the minutes, and Dominic seconds him. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Is anybody opposed? Okay, looks like everybody's in favor of adopting them, and nobody's in opposition of it. So moving right along. Next on the agenda is new business. This is something that I've brought up, and it's concerning the Utah Insurance Department's webpage. They have a listing of current sureties and past sureties on the Utah Department of Insurance's webpage that basically would give a consumer or anybody else the ability to verify whether a company was in existence, get some contact information for them. And I'll obviously defer to anybody in the insurance department if I'm missing anything as the purposes for that. But that's basically my understanding of why that list exists, which I do favor, and I do think that the list is an important resource and is something that should be in existence. But the issue that I've come up with on that particular issue, on that particular list, is for my own particular company, the phone number I have listed on that website is an administrative number. It's not a business phone number. And as things have evolved in the landscape of the internet and stuff like that, as many of you in the industry may understand, Google has relegated us to not being able to do any kind of ad spending. My impression is that they've challenged us in what's called an organic scoring when it comes to search engine optimization and how high ranking your company may come up when you do a Google search for bail bonds. And as that evolution has taken place, the insurance department's website is now very prominent on a Google search. So if you're interested in finding out what I'm talking about, if you were just to type in on the Google bar Utah bail bonds, you would find that the insurance department's website comes up probably at the top, if not just a couple of companies down. And I do the search fairly often. I probably do it more often than a normal person, a reasonable person would, but this has become a pretty big issue for me and my company, in that it's become a primary means, or at least a substantial means, for customers to know, to find out about a bail bond company, or to locate a bail bond company for their services. And you know, for some companies who may only have one phone number which is listed, and it may be a business phone number, it may not be much of an issue. For others of us who are farther down the list, meaning it's an alphabetical list, and for those of us who are farther down the list, may not understand just how many phone calls may be coming in from as a result of this list. I'm fairly far down, and so I'm surprised at how many calls I receive for bail bond business on that number, which is a challenge for us. It's a challenge for my customers because they're not reaching the appropriate place. I mean, it's a one number. I have a statewide operation. It's a one number for everybody as far as what I have listed on the insurance department. So I'll have people from all over the country trying to get bonds all over the state of Utah, but are calling this administrative number in order to get it, which is, there's a whole, you know, challenge of making sure that I am answering the call, especially at odd hours, and then making sure that my agent is available to contact them back or vice versa. And I just see it as probably an unfair advantage for those who are on the top of the list, especially as this times have evolved and this has become more prevalent where customers are calling this number, this off of this list to get a hold of bail bond companies. Traditionally, published list by government agencies in Utah that have bail bond companies on there, our answer to it has been to rotate these lists at once a month so that everybody has a fair chance of being on the top of the list and getting their fair shake in all this. And I have had a little bit of discussion with the insurance department over this. We haven't concluded any real solutions for this. Read the last email I had with you. You did mention that it was possible that maybe the phone numbers that are listed on this aren't a requirement by code, but obviously it is required by code for the insurance department to have the listings of the companies, possibly their addresses and their emails, which I don't see as the main part of the problem here. I really think that the phone number has become the real issue here. And so, I mean, I'll just go ahead and probably speak prematurely as far as a possible solution, which works for me in my mind, would be maybe if we could eliminate the phone numbers off of this list, that would cure the problem. I wouldn't want to have to go down a more extensive solution as far as asking the insurance department to have their IT guy rotate the list every month, or something even more extensive as far as trying to change the organic score that the insurance department is having so that it wasn't coming up so prominently on a Google search for bail bonds in the state of Utah. So I just want to open the floor now to anybody else that may have a thoughts or on the issue. I'm not sure if anybody's had enough time, but I do know I've spoke with a few people in the industry, and I know that I'm not the only one that shares this concern. So if anybody else has any comments or any ideas on how we could, you know, come to a resolution on this, I would appreciate it.
Well, this is Steve with the insurance department, and I'll just say, in regards to your solution of just taking the phone numbers off, as long as that's fine according to the statute and with what Reed and Perry say, I don't have a problem with that. That would take me probably 10 minutes to do, if that.
Okay. Now, to me, I think that's an excellent solution to the problem of an unfair advantage for one bail bond company who may come up on the top or somewhere on the top of the list versus somebody who's on the very bottom of the list. Again, if you're lower on the list, you may not quite realize how much business is coming through on this list. I can just tell you with my own organization that I'm fielding up to, on average, at least one call a day, and oftentimes it's more than one call a day. And so I know that's on a statewide basis, so there might be, you know, people who are trying to seek a bond in multiple locations in the state of Utah that I might be receiving more calls than somebody who might be operating in only one location. But and again, I haven't had a very many complaints from anybody who's on the top of the list, because they may be just fine with the particular situation. But you know, unless anybody's opposed to the removal of the phone numbers, I would certainly like to entertain that, and I would open the floor up again to anybody that had an opposition to that phone number, those phone numbers being removed from the bail bond list.
This is Dominic. I think that's a bad idea overall. I mean, how are consumers going to locate someone that they're searching for?
Well, they'll have an email address and or a mailing address that will be listed on there, and I suppose that could be one way. But
I mean, I often refer to that list to people that are looking. Like, if they call and say, "Do you know this person's number?" I'll say, here's the website, and you can locate it there if I'm on the road or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking out loud.
Yeah, I understand that it's convenient and whatnot, but I hope you understand my assessment that there's an unfair advantage for the companies who are on the very top of the list. Just like any list that's inside of any jail at any given time, whoever's on the top of that list is receiving a bulk of the phone calls for business in that given month.
Clay.
Again, this go ahead. Who is this?
Clay, Todd Harris here.
Hello, Todd.
Being how I'm the one that's on the top of the list. I'm not getting that much business because of that. I'm just you guys do whatever you want, and I'm going to support you. But I'm telling you, as one who is on the top of that list, I'm not getting that much business. But you have a very valid point, because I pushed that years and years and years ago to do a rotating list. So I support you 100%, whatever you want to do. And I'll sign off.
Well, I thank you very much, Todd, and it comes a lot coming from you, because you are on the top of the list, and I do respect the fact that you believe that you're not getting a lot of business off of that. Now, I'm not the all being and all knowing on the issue. I can just tell you this, that I don't publish my administrative number anywhere at all besides on this insurance list, and now I'm getting calls from within jails on this particular administrative number, and I can only attribute that to internet access to an inmate in a jail somewhere that might be getting that phone number from there. Other than that, I wouldn't ever list my administrative number on a jail list or anything like that. So, and I'm, I'm open to alternatives to removing the phone number. I do believe that one of the best alternatives might be to rotate that list every month, which I think would be a bit of a burden for the insurance department to do that. But, that's just my thoughts on it. And I understand what Dominic is saying as far as it's a convenience to be able to refer one company to another while you're on the road by just referring them to one thing. I mean, possibly maybe an alternative could be the UAPBA could create a website that had a listing of all the phone numbers for bail bond companies, which I'd be fairly confident the UAPBA website wouldn't have the same kind of organic pull on an organic score on search engine optimization as the insurance department does with Google. That might be a possible alternative as well. I encourage everybody, though, that might have any questions at all about this, go ahead and open up your computers and type in a Google bar and type in Utah bail bonds and just see where that comes up. And hopefully you'd understand that a lot of customers are looking at that. Steve, may I ask you a question, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you say that Perry basically said that there wouldn't be necessarily an issue with removing the phone numbers from the list?
Oh, no. I was just asking for an opinion, because I don't know what the statute may or may not say, but she might know, or Reed might know. While I'm here, as far as rotating the list, if that's the route we wanted to go also, that wouldn't take me too much time, other than I would just have to remember to do it once a month, unless our website is built on WordPress, and it's possible that maybe there's some sort of tool, I guess, that someone's made that would rotate that list. I don't know. I could have our web team maybe see what they know of. But again, if I had to rotate that list, that would probably not take me more than 10 minutes a month anyway.
Okay, well then that's good to know. Now, to the notion of rotating that list, would it be possible to take non-active companies and put them in a separate space than active companies? Because one of the challenges that we all experience in the industry with these rotating lists is it can take several months, especially if it's rotated on a monthly basis. It could take several months for you to reach the top of the list. And so, to me, it would only make sense that if the active companies were on the rotated part of it, and then the non-active companies, I mean, I don't have much of a concern with them, but maybe they could be relegated to the very bottom of the list or something to that effect.
I don't know. Just based on, like if there's a tool, it would depend on what the tool does. But if it was me doing it manually, I'd just skip to the next active one and move all of the others down. You see what I'm saying? So, like, if the next one under you is one that's not working, not currently in business, I would just move that one up and then move that one down and move the next one.
I see what you're saying. Like maybe skip a couple of spots that particular month if a non-active company was going to end up on the top.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I just automatically move those to the bottom, and then it would preserve the same order, the alphabetical order, but no one would really see them ever at the top because I'd just move them.
Okay. One of the challenges I have personally with this is that we're only meeting once a quarter, and I would just assume get this addressed here and now on this meeting instead of waiting another 3 months. This is already something that I've been waiting several months to address. And meanwhile, just increasing my aggravation every time I receive a call on that administrative number. So I'm open to alternatives to removing the phone numbers. I understand that there's some concern that those numbers might need to stay there or might be important to be there. I'm also open to the rotating the list. It sounds like Steve could do that without putting too much burden on him over that. So I'd like to get some feedback from any of the other board members on what they believe maybe should be, or even any of the audience members. That would be nice to hear.
This is Tony.
This is Dominic.
Oh, go ahead, Tony. I think the numbers need to stay there. I think it's important that when someone looks up a company, that the number is there to call. So I think, in my opinion, the number staying there is important. So I'm more in favor of rotating the list.
Okay. How about you, Dominic?
I could think that if it's not a problem for Steve to do it, then that would solve the problem, right, Clay?
Yeah, that's an absolutely good, fine enough solution for me. I mean, one thing I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to obviously change my administrative number off the list and come up with some kind of a solution to do that. But I'm certainly willing to do so in order to reach resolution on all this. So,
just to throw another wrench in the works here, this is Steve.
Okay.
If I end up getting a tool, and this is presuming that there is something out there. I don't know whether there is or whether there's not, but potentially there could be something that would randomize the order depending on just when somebody gets to the page. Is that something you would be interested in? And then it would just be whoever, like, it could be you one time, it could be Todd one time, it could be Dominic. It just, you know, it would just be whatever the randomness decides.
You mean a shuffle.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not completely opposed to that, but I do foresee somebody believing or questioning the validity of it, whether or not it was truly shuffled or whether, you know, I mean, I could just see where maybe one company wound up on the top of the list, although I seem to be the only one in the room here that's concerned about who's where and what on the list. But I could possibly conceive people saying, well, geez, so-and-so was on that list three times on the top of the list, you know, and so because I know that some of that stuff has come up with the UAPBA on the rotating lists that are within the jails. And that's why we settled on the rotating list. That way it's really cut and dry. Everybody understands that they get their 1 month on the top of the list. A lot of people look forward to that 1 month and plan on it. And, you know, I think there's a lot of faith that it's being done fairly and equitably, and everybody can see and expect what's about to happen on that list, you know, when it's rotated.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I don't mind that.
Clay, this is Reed. Could I speak for a second?
No, absolutely, Reed. Please do.
Thank you. I really think it's critical that we iron out exactly how this rotation will occur. Because, I mean, as you've already suggested, I'm afraid that people are going to be ticked off if, you know, it takes 8 months for them to be at the top of the list, if there's some kind of randomized way of doing this. Or if it's not randomized, I'm also concerned that people are going to think, oh, well, the department has prejudice or bias against me, and so they're not putting me on the top of the list. I think it's really critical that we spell out exactly how that rotation will occur. Now, it sounds like that your industry organization has already done that. Is that true? You've already have
true.
A way to rotate it?
Well, that's true, we do.
Why don't we just do it the same way then?
Well, part of the challenge in that is that the UAPBA does 12 different lists, and so in any given jail, the positions are different in any, you know, in any company. So basically, how that all has started was the lists were done alphabetically, and that's very much similar to what's going on here with the insurance website. And then from day one, when we started rotating them, we left everybody in alphabetical order and then rotated them that way. And so that might be a solution to what you're suggesting, which I very much appreciate, because probably me more than most people am concerned about the very thing that you're bringing up, making sure that it's a fair and equitable system, that everybody is getting their fair shake, and that nobody's placing any blame or undue scrutiny on the insurance department for favoring one over the other or anything like that. So, but that might be a solution, that we basically screenshot, or, you know, take the list as it is today and the order that it's in, and any future companies that would be introduced into the industry, they will be placed in an alphabetical order on that list. And then, you know, I mean, luck of the draw, and I wouldn't put it past some companies to try and hedge that a little bit by naming their company a certain way, but I don't think that's going to be much of an issue, because it's really only a month's advantage that one's going to get. So,
okay, so let's say we start doing this, and it's May 1, Steve's sitting down to do the rotation. What does he do? Does he take the company that's on the bottom and put them at the top, and then that's the end of it, or is there more of rotation than that?
I think that's an excellent way to do it, like you suggest, Reed. On the lists that are in the jail, there are multiple columns. It's not just one linear list. So what we generally do is if you're in the top left-hand corner of a list, once your month is over where you're on the top left, you'll be rotated down to the bottom right-hand corner of the list. And the list just kind of works its way all the way through that way. But this wouldn't be this isn't a multiple column list. So I think what you're describing is exactly how I would suggest to do it. And that is the top, the company who's on the very top of the list would be moved down to the very bottom of the list. The second in line would move up to the top, and so on and so forth.
Okay. So I get it. Thank you.
So back to front then. Right. So the bottom one becomes the top one, and then the bottom one becomes the top one. Bottom one becomes the top one.
I don't think it's necessarily important which direction it was rotated. I mean, because I think what you're suggesting would work just fine. It wouldn't matter one way or the other.
Just so long as there's some movement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
All we're concerned about is having a new person at the top, and then everybody else shifts down one. No, does that mean the second person remains the second person?
No. So, like, hypothetically, say there were 30 companies, and so you would list it from 1 to 30, you know, all the way down.
in my mind how I was initially conceiving it, and it wouldn't matter one way or the other. I would say that the company number one would move down to position number 30, and company number two on the list would move to position one, and company number three would move to position two, and so on and so forth. It wouldn't really matter to me which direction it headed in. If company number one moved to company position number two, and company position number 30 moved to position one, that would be just fine with me as well. I mean, it wouldn't matter, but basically the understanding would be is that it's a rotating situation, and it's also in line, like no randomization, like we were describing, where we all understood where we were at in the order, and when we could expect to be up the top or at the bottom.
And this would not include, this rotation would not include inactive companies, right?
I would hope not, because of the very issue that you mentioned, that if we included inactive companies, I'm sure there's 50-something on this entire webpage. And then we're talking about a four-year wait period before you're on the top of the list.
Yeah. So is that phrase that you've used, inactive companies, is that something that everybody – does everybody have the same understanding of the meaning of that phrase, what an active company is and what an inactive company is? Because we don't want to run into any problems with somebody saying, no, that's inactive. No, they're active. Is that a concern at all?
Well, according to the currently published insurance list, the inactive companies have a red line through all of their information.
Oh,
And that indicates that they're no longer an active bail bond company right now, and that they have been in the past, but are no longer. So that would, to me, that's the easy way to differentiate between an active and an inactive company.
Okay. Thank you, Clay. I showed my ignorance there. Thank you for straightening me up.
Nope, not a problem. And to probably over explain it, an active company in my mind is a company who's currently licensed and has the ability to write a bond today. And any active company would be a company that's either surrendered their license or something to that nature, where their license was not active and they could not write a bond today.
Okay. I'd have to go back and look at the statute, but I'm wondering why the department has companies without a license even on the list.
I'm going to assume it's partially because even after a bail bond company becomes inactive, they still have bonds that are in effect out in the industry. Customers may be seeking collateral back from them that they may have paid collateral to them once they've had their bond exonerated, or, you know, the things of that nature would be my assumption as to why we would want to list an inactive company is still.
Thank you, Clay. That makes perfect sense. That answers my questions. Steve, what are you thinking? It sounds like you just have to really make one movement, the 30 up to number one, and then everybody drops down.
Right. And thinking about it more, the way I have the web page built now, it would take, I can rebuild it and spend probably maybe a couple of hours rebuilding it really quick. So each company has its own, currently it's a table, we'll say. So currently it's a table. I could do rebuild it a different way so I can move each one individually, and then it would take me 30 seconds a month to switch it. So it would just be a matter of reminding myself and doing it super fast. So that's no problem at all. And then
I bet Clay would call you every month.
I absolutely will. Since I've been on this board for this many years, and this is the only real issue that I've ever really come up with, I'm sure I will. So,
and what I can do also, so at the bottom of the page, like WordPress just naturally tracks whenever a page is updated, and so it'll show it down there. But I can also put a note at the top that just says like rotated May 2021 or whatever, something like that. So people know the last time it was shifted. And then my preference, just for, you know, whether to keep the active and the inactive together, my preference would be to keep them in the same list versus separating them out, since everything's alphabetical. And you may have a consumer come on looking at for one particular company, and they may not know to look in the inactive list or something. So if they can just go to one list, and I'll just remember to shift everything, and if I see a struck through one at the top, I'll just move it to the bottom, so it's not an issue.
Yeah, that would be very satisfactory to me, as long as we weren't burning up a month.
Nope.
With the top position. I mean, I think if you look down the list, there's even a couple of sections where there's a number of inactive companies that are consecutive there.
Yep.
And I wouldn't want to burn up several months with inactive companies on there that way. So
yeah, absolutely.
So Steve, let me make sure I understand this. If number 30 is inactive and goes up to number one, you'd automatically move it to number two, and 29 would go up to number one. Is that right?
Exactly right.
Okay, thank you. So, Clay, it sounds like maybe we've got this figured out. It would be helpful for the department, I think, to have the board give us some direction, do this. And so maybe I'm not telling you what to do. It's your meeting, but maybe a vote on this would be appropriate.
I absolutely agree. So my apologies for my ignorance on this particular issue. Am I, as the chair, able to motion, suggest a motion for something?
You bet.
Okay. Then since this seems to be my issue and I seem to understand it maybe a little bit more than most, I'll go ahead and motion that the board suggests to the insurance department that we rotate the list, the bail bond license agencies list, in a fashion where the bottom company that's on the list would rotate to the top position on the list, and subsequently each company would move down a position on the list monthly to help alleviate and maybe even create a more fair system for all companies. If I can get anybody to second that motion, we move forward.
And could I add, and in no case will an inactive company be at the top of the list?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Reed. That's absolutely the a good point to add to my motion, that an inactive company skip their position as at the top of the list, or in the event that there's consecutive inactive companies, that the whole group would skip past the top of the list. I'm looking at the list here real quickly here, and I'm just going to try and see. You know, there's a section here where three companies, Able, Ace, and All Area Bail Bonds, they're all three together on the list consecutively. In the event that type of a situation would arise, all three of those companies would bypass the top of the list and move back down to the bottom, or vice versa, actually. My apologies for confusing things, because I realized that we've somewhat settled on the notion that bottom company would move to the top of the list.
So those three companies would just move down one slot in the list.
Yeah. I apologize for making this more complicated, and I don't want to keep, you know, muddying up the waters here, but I think that we're probably better off rotating the list in that, where company number two moves to position number one, company number one moves to hypothetically position number 30. Do we understand that rotation instead? The reason why I bring that up is because, just like the instance that I suggested where there would be multiple companies who are inactive who may be coming up on the list, those companies would
automatically be relegated off of the top of the list and moved back down to the bottom, where the next active company would then experience a month of being at the top of the list. I think if we do it the other way around, in my mind, it just seems counterintuitive to have to. I mean, I don't. And the more I think about it, I mean, I'm sorry that I'm so confused in my own mind about it, but it just seems easier that if we rotated it like I suggested, where company number one moves to company position number 30, company number two moves to company position number one, and so on and so forth.
This is Reed. I agree. You've hit it on the head, I think, and I think doing it the other way would be difficult to administer.
Okay, so let me attempt to. Oh, go ahead, Kurt.
I think that's a great way to do it. But if you really, really want to make it totally fair right from the very beginning, do a one-time shuffle and then do the rotation.
I would agree with that. That's not a bad idea at all. So I defer to Steve as to whether or not the randomizing of it is even possible. I know that was just a suggestion of a possibility. So I don't know that we've confirmed whether or not that's something that he would be able to do.
Currently, that's not something I could do. I mean, I could write them all out on pieces of paper and throw them in the air and pick them up at random. That's about the best I could do with that.
Clay will come down and help you.
Yeah, right.
I'll officiate over it, right?
The issue with that, well, though, is then where do new companies go in? Do they slot in at the top or at the bottom?
I think that's exactly, and I think that's probably why we haven't done that very thing with the lists that are currently in the jails. Is that it created an issue as to where does a new company get introduced into the list? So my apologies, Kurt, but we may not want to adopt that suggestion for the very reasons.
I'm just throwing out a thought. That's all.
No, I think it does sound like a fair idea in principle, but the practicality of it might challenge us on it. So I'll attempt again. I'll motion that the insurance department rotates the bail bond agency's list, bypassing any of the inactive companies when they're due to be on top of the list, and bypassing them from their time on the top of the list and skipping through a rotation so that an active company at any given time will be listed on the top of the list.
I second the motion. This is Tony.
Thank you, Tony. All right, all in favor? Say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Is anybody opposed? All right, looks like we'll pass that one with all in favor. I appreciate everybody's cooperation with me on that. I know it may not be a huge issue to everybody, but it has been a bit of a thorn in my side. So I appreciate everybody, you know, being cooperative and helping me out with that. So. All right, we'll move on to old business. And apparently we have some expiring board members' terms, and I think Steve will have us do something about that.
We do, yeah. So we have two members whose appointments are expiring, and those members are Dominic and Tony. Both of them can be reappointed to a second term, which we're going to consider. But if anybody else wants to also be considered, they can send me a resume just at my email, which is sgooch@utah.gov. Probably by May 15th, I think, is a good deadline so that we can have a chance to review everything and then get everybody in by June 30th, which is the date when the members expire or their appointments. Also, Ken Jones, Lieutenant Ken Jones, got a new job up at Summit County, and he can no longer participate on the board, so he resigned his seat. His replacement, Lieutenant Casey Bates, said she's willing to take his seat, and we think she'll be a great addition. She's been there for 23 years, and she's already sent me her information. I suspect we'll move forward, but if anyone has a general public member that wants to apply, they can certainly do that.
Okay. Clay, could I just add one thing to that?
Yes, you may, Reed. Go ahead.
Thank you. Dominic and Tony have been great members. But I understand that they may have had a gutful of this, and they may want to move on. So we're not automatically going to if they would like to do it, they would also need to submit their names if they want to do it again, because we don't want to presume that they'd like to continue when maybe they don't. So I just add that as well. So Tony and Dominic, if you want to apply, please apply. But if you don't, we're not going to throw your names in the hat without you knowing about it.
All right. I'll echo the sentiments that I'd really like Dominic and Tony to stay on. I think they've been great to work with, and so I'd encourage them both to do so if they were willing to do it. So
this is Dominic, and in the past, I'm not super clear about how it happened, but, we just reapply, and then who decide? Does the board decide who's going to stay on or take places? I don't remember.
The commissioner decides. So if you're still interested, if anybody is still interested, I suggest you just send an email to Steve Gooch,
and they'll review it and then contact us right?
Yeah. If anybody who wants to do it should get a hold of Steve.
And I'll put a note on the website as well, just so everyone has all the information.
Okay. If that's everything for that, we'll move on to other business. And my apologies for not giving any warning, but this is just an afterthought that I basically have just had. In our most recent legislative session, HB 220 has passed, which will repeal much of HB 206 that is given our industry so much heartburn. My understanding is it's to go into effect on May 5th. Although I've heard three different dates, and so I can't confirm that May 5th is the absolute date that it will be. May 5th is just the last date that I've heard from the administrative office of the courts as to when 206 or HB 220, goes into effect. And it repeals most everything that was in 206. A few things that will remain in HB 206 is the allocation of our forfeiture money will go still partially to prosecutors and to pretrial programs in the jurisdiction in which the forfeiture or the judgment was placed. We still will only be notified about or be required to be notified of our FTAs through email instead of a certified mailing. I'm trying to, my mind's drawn a little bit blank here on what other issue may still exist from 206 that would be relevant to our industry. If anybody in the room or on the meeting knows of what I'm missing, please speak up and announce that.
Was there a fiscal note attached to that?
I want to say yes, there was, but I couldn't speak to it or what it said. I do believe that there was something to that, because I think the courts were going to have to implement or re-implement things back that what they have changed.
Unless it's specifically within the bill, if there's a fiscal note, plus or minus, it will usually be effective on July 1st. If there's no fiscal impacts, then it'll be May 5th.
Okay. Well, then my inclination that there may not have been a fiscal note, because I have never heard anything about July. I've only heard different dates in May as to when this was going to go through and be back into effect, or at least go into effect.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't looked at that for a while, so I couldn't tell you. So.
A couple of the positive things for our industry that we're getting back with HB 220 is the 180 days on a forfeiture is back. You're going to go back into effect. Again, my mind is drawing blank on all this. I have so many different thoughts going through my head here. I'm having trouble recalling it. Obviously, the court's requirement to do a least restrictive means of release is going to go away, and hopefully allow judges to use bail if they see the way they want to do that. I know that there is a challenge in that procedurally how that works out is. It's all done through computers anymore. The AOC had removed basically a entry point for a judge to use bail. And so it was challenging for a judge to set bail on somebody, because that wasn't even an option for him to use on his computer system. But I wouldn't say promised, and I haven't been promised anything personally, but I've heard through the grapevine that that's being addressed. And that those concerns of a judge being able to implement bail are going to come back. And so, I've only heard through the grapevine. I don't have any specific communication with the Department of the Administrative Courts, Administrative Office of the Courts. And so I can't say absolutely definitively that's when that's going to take place and all that. I've just heard, like I said, that that's one thing they're working on. I know that there's a working group that's going to take place over the summer. I do believe they have a meeting towards the end of this month to start working, hashing out some of the issues that came about. And I'd just like to publicly thank law enforcement, some defense attorneys, the ACLU and Libertas. I know those groups were very instrumental in getting HB 220 repealed, and I thank them, because I do believe, not just as a bail bondsman, but as a citizen of Utah, that criminal accountability is something that we all need to be concerned with. And I think that repealing a lot of the stuff that was in 206 is not just good for our industry, but it's good for citizens, and strangely enough, it's good for the criminal as well, or the defendant, because some of the things that come from 206 was creating an unfair situation for a person accused of a crime and not being able to be afforded their right to bail, which Utah is a right to bail state. So, I applaud all their efforts in doing so, and anybody else in the industry here that was, instrumental in getting anything done. So that's all I have on that issue. If anybody has any other business they'd like to mention, this would be the time to do so.
Well, hey, this is Tony, really quick. A couple of things. The list in Ogden hasn't been rotated since October, but that's just a quick thing. Second of all, I just tried to get one of my agents, a new agent, licensed. And I know you've all been through this, but the fingerprinting on that is ridiculous. I don't know why we have to go. There's only two locations in the state that you can go get fingerprinted, and one of them's in Taylorsville, and one of them, I think, is in St. George. And I don't know why we can't just go to a local sheriff's department or something and get fingerprinted. for agent to write a bail. Is anyone have thoughts on that? Because, I mean, if you're in Logan, you're going to have to drive all the way to Taylorsville to get fingerprinted. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I'll share you're very concerned with that, Tony, because I, too, have had hired a new agent recently and had to wait over 2 weeks for this guy to get his fingerprints done. And he was lucky enough to live in St. George, so it wasn't a proximity issue for him. It was just that Prometrics, the company that was being required to do these, their machine broke down. And so, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, their fingerprinting must not be a very integral part of their business, because a two-week lag on getting their machine fixed so that we could get our fingerprints done and I could get the guy licensed up just seemed to me be inadequate. And so, and to the point that you're speaking, he had no alternative. His only alternative to getting his fingerprints in St. George was to drive up to Lehigh, which wasn't an option for him because he owns his own other businesses as well, and just couldn't afford to leave, you know, his other businesses to drive up to Lehigh in order to get his fingerprints done. So it was a big problem for us. We were out of business in St. George as a result of it for 2 weeks. And to me, I think the same thing you thought. I thought, I can't believe there's not an alternative to this Prometrics company. I mean, it seems like to me being able to go to a sheriff's office and getting your fingerprints done should be a valid and acceptable way to have fingerprints done. I mean, I'm no expert on it, but
let me jump in here, Clay. This is Curtin. Reed, is there statute or rule, department rule, that says that fingerprints must be obtained at certain locations only?
No. I think the concern is, I think it's sort of a chain of custody concern. Goes to the and gets fingerprinted at the sheriff's office, and then what do they do with those? They take them somewhere else, and take them somewhere else. Are those truly the fingerprints of the person who claims they are? Their fingerprints.
That's always been kind of a concern to some people. But you know, when it comes to like the concealed weapons program, anybody can do the fingerprints as long as the printer signs it, dates it, and the person who's fingerprinted dates it and signs it. And so anybody can do the fingerprints on concealed weapons. So, I think that's a bigger concern than somebody like these bail bond companies that they're going to do their own background checks on whoever they hire anyway.
So, Clay, this is Tracy. If I may add just an idea here.
Yes, please, Tracy.
I believe that Prometric is our vendor for that type of thing. This may be a better agenda item for your next meeting so that we can have Randy participate, because I'm fairly certain he could answer your questions.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy. That's a good idea, we'll try and do that. And my expectation, I don't believe Tony's was either, that we were going to resolve this issue here and now. I just do appreciate Tony bringing it up, and because I do echo his sentiments. I think that it's something that, I mean, and you guys can understand, it's quite inconvenient to be out of business for something like that. Now, I have one question to anybody in the insurance department that may know. Is it the case that the insurance department isn't receiving these fingerprints and doing anything with them? Wouldn't it be that Prometrics was sending the fingerprints to BCI for verification that the person wasn't a problem?
I don't know, and that's why I think that the discussion is better had with Randy. He would know immediately what's happening with fingerprints.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure that the department's contract has more licensing locations than Taylorsville and St. George, so
I'm a little bit surprised about this, but I'm happy to follow up with Randy, have him ready to go at the next meeting to talk about.
I spoke with Heidi at the state, and she said that that was it. There was those locations, and that was all there was to it.
I've done my research on it as well because I tried to find an alternative for my agent in St. George. And Reed, you are right. There are more locations than Salt Lake and St. George, that one other being Lehi, Utah. So it's not as if there are several locations all over the place. And I even contacted Prometrics and kind of gave them my peace of mind over the whole situation. And they suggested to me, incredibly enough, that maybe I open up my own office and I can become a Prometrics location and get into the fingerprinting business myself, which of course I'm not interested in doing and all that. But I think that might have been the smart aleck remark that somebody was giving to me because I was telling them right. That they had a backward system. So,
or you can hire my wife; she does fingerprints for my classes.
There you go. Now, I might be over assuming, and I'll certainly, you know, give myself room to be wrong on this, and that is I just don't believe that the insurance department has the resources to do anything with a fingerprint, meaning I don't think they process them. I don't think they're have a database that they control that does anything with any of these fingerprints. I'm pretty positive that it goes to BCI for confirmation. And by the reason why I'm bringing up that point is if and to speak to Reed's concern, or at least his suggestion that a concern may be a chain of possession, maybe it's that we can go to a sheriff's department, they can do the fingerprints, and then they send them to BCI, you know, and that way, nobody else is holding them. It's going straight from a sheriff's department to BCI. It's not something that's going to come up very often. I imagine the UAPBA could work out some kind of a negotiation with the sheriff so that they weren't put out on it all, maybe a fee or something like that, so that they could not have to have the burden of postage or whatever it might be. But I do know that, you know, in the past, we used to go to the sheriff's department to get them. I know that. So,
okay, I will. I'll look into that. Thank you, Clay.
Well, the other factor is this: so what is the extent of the background check using the fingerprints? Some backgrounds are only statewide; others are national. So, mm-hmm. You know, if it's a national, then BCI also forwards that to the FBI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not aware of why or what exactly that is. I mean, I obviously understand why a fingerprint would be important and giving somebody or the agency the identification of somebody and making sure that they are who they were supposed to be and that they weren't something nefarious. So, but as to why, whether it's a nationwide or just a statewide thing, I really am not aware of. I wouldn't.
Yeah, but that's something that's got to be discovered first to see, you know, because if it's just BCI doing it statewide, no big deal. Yeah, that those mm-hmm. are pretty slender. But concealed weapons permits, the fingerprints are statewide and national, so it goes to the FBI.
So I might be wrong in this, but
anybody can do the fingerprints for a conceal.
Yeah. I might be wrong in this as well, but it would seem to me that if the FBI would be the end-all, be-all on this, and that would be that if the FBI was doing a fingerprint analysis, that would include the state of Utah as well. Meaning that would
necessarily.
They would exclude Utah's concerns? I mean,
They will do a Utah, but the BCI's statewide checks also with a lot of the local jurisdictions. So it's not you know, the FBI doesn't do local jurisdictions.
Oh, okay, I understand. All right, well, that seems like it's that's fodder for next quarter's agenda or meeting, so that we can have something to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, all right.
Again, my apologies for my ignorance on that. Is that something we should motion for? Or is that something that I can just bring up at the next board meeting?
It needs to be on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll make sure
that I bring it up. Okay. Well, I'll confirm before the next meeting, the next quarter, and I'll make sure that that's something that we can discuss, and hopefully the insurance department can get a little prepared and understand what it is we're asking for, and you know, maybe come up with some solutions. Is there any other business that anybody would like to discuss?
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, I'll take that. Will anybody second it? Was that Tony that seconded it? Okay.
Correct.
All right, all in favor of adjourning the meeting, say aye.
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 Aye. Is anybody opposed? Aye. Okay, looks like this meeting is adjourned. I thank you very much for participating and attending, everybody.
Hey, Clay, this is Steve. I need to give the end code.
Yes, I'm sorry, Steve. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good. So the end code is 180220. And if people will get them to me by about 1:45, that'd be swell.
All right, thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Clay.